And now, VOA's International Edition. Coming up, searching the Java Sea for a missing passenger plane, plus the U.S. NATO war in Afghanistan, formally over. An Air Asia plane carrying 162 people is missing. It happened over stormy Indonesian waters with no word on its fate, despite several hours of searching by air and sea. Air Asia Flight 8501 vanished in airspace thick with storm clouds on its way from Surabaya, Indonesia, to Singapore. Searchers had to fight against heavy rain. Nearly all the passengers and crew are Indonesians who were frequent visitors to Singapore, particularly on the holidays. Airbus A320 took off Sunday morning from Indonesia's second-largest city and was about halfway to Singapore when it vanished from radar. The jet had been airborne for about 42 minutes. There was no distress signal, according to Joko Murjajodo, the Indonesian acting director general of transportation. Malaysian-based carrier loss comes on top of still unexplained disappearances of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 in March and the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in July over Ukraine. The Italian Coast Guard says at least one person has died while attempting to rescue a burning car ferry that off the Greek island of Corfu. Hundreds of passengers remain trapped on the vessel as Greek and Italian helicopters attempt to reach the stricken ferry in a rescue effort hampered by gale force winds and high seas. A flotilla of nearby merchant ships, that is, formed a protective barrier around the stricken ship as firefighting vessels headed to the boat for both sides of the Adriatic. They're approaching it from both sides. The fire broke out on the car deck of the Italian flag ferry traveling from the western Greek city of Patras to the Italian port of Ancona. Coast Guard spokesperson says about 150 of the nearly 500 people on board have made their way to safety. This week marks the beginning of a new chapter between the United States and Afghanistan as a 13-year war waged by American and NATO forces has ended in Afghanistan. VOA's Michael Bowman reports.
Spawned by the horror and trauma of the attacks of September 11th, 2001.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps.
America's longest ever ground war is now over. The commander of the International Security Assistance Force, U.S. General John Campbell, marked the occasion at a ceremony in Kabul.
Today marks the end of an era, the beginning of a new one. Today, NATO completes its combat mission, a 13-year endeavor filled with significant achievements and branded by tremendous sacrifice, especially by the thousands of coalition and Afghan army and police wounded and fallen who gave so much to build a brighter future for this war-torn land.
Afghan security advisor Hanif Atmar attended the event.
On behalf of President Ghani and the people of Afghanistan, I would like to express our deepest gratitude for the NATO coalition's efforts and sacrifices in Afghanistan since 2001. The costs of our struggle have been enormous.
Ending the war, which claimed the lives of almost 3,500 NATO troops, including more than 2,000 U.S. service members, at a cost of more than $1 trillion, has been a primary goal of the Obama presidency.
Our longest war will come to a responsible end. And that gives us an opportunity to step back and reflect upon all that these families have given us. We're able to gather with family and friends because our troops are willing to hug theirs goodbye and step forward to serve.
The timing of the combat force pullout divided Washington for much of the past year. In March, then ISAF commander Joseph Dunford made an ominous prediction.
If we leave at the end of 2014, the Afghan security forces will begin to deteriorate. the security environment will begin to deteriorate.
But in September, Afghanistan signed a long-delayed pact with the United States and NATO, allowing a residual force to remain and continue training and advising the country's security forces. Republican Senator John McCain, a critic of the Obama administration's withdrawal timetable, is now sounding a hopeful note on Afghanistan's future.
I believe that we are now in a time where with the proper support and proper effort, partnership with the United States in every way, including militarily and economically.
Some residents of Kabul share in the cautious optimism. One says he is proud of Afghan security forces, while another urges continued U.S. and NATO commitment to the training mission. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Syria's government says it's willing to meet the country's opposition in Moscow to seek an end to the nearly 4-year civil war. However, obstacles remain in finding a path to that peace. The militant Islamic State, which controls about a third of Syria, has not been part of any initiative to end that fighting. Other opposition groups are not unified in response to the prospect of meeting with the Syrian officials in Moscow. However, Russia's foreign ministry said the meeting between Syria and the opposition was expected to take place in late January and would be, in their words, informal. On the lighter side of the news, New Yorkers, tourists lined up in Times Square on Sunday to ring in the new year a little early by throwing away bad memories as part of the traditional Good Riddance Day. About 100 people shredded or crushed their problems or bad memories from 2014, hoping for a fresh start in 2015. One couple said good riddance to stress and arguing, while a young girl energetically smashed her inhaler, wishing for a year where she wouldn't have to use it as often. Tim Tompkins is president of the Times Square Alliance.
It's not really just that it's a party. It's a way of saying enough of the past and start again, start fresh.
The Times Square Alliance, which was founded in 1992, was set up to promote and cultivate the creativity, energy, and edge, as they put it, of the famous New York spot. Good Riddance Day, inspired by a Latin American tradition in which New Year's revelers stuff dolls with objects representing bad memories before setting those dolls on fire. Mercy. Well, a little box office news for you. Jennifer Lawrence is top Forbes magazine 2014 list of highest grossing actors, with her movies earning a total of $1.4 billion. And global box office, 24-year-old Oscar winner, starred in the blockbusters The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1, and X-Men Days of Future Past this year. Those are some of the stories making news here on The Voice of America. Find a lot more at voanews.com.
This is Business News on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. Following an incident in which one of its drivers allegedly raped a female passenger in New Delhi, ride-hailing company Uber has announced additional safety measures that it's taking in India. Last month, Uber came under scrutiny in New Delhi after a driver for the service was arrested and charged with rape. Uber suspended its service there while reviewing its operations in the market, and in response, Uber has laid out additional measures that it is taking to ensure passenger safety in the India market. That includes having all of its drivers reviewed again to ensure that they have authentic and valid police verification, as well as hiring local safety experts to detect fraud and to help more effective screening methods for its drivers. Growth in Germany, Europe's biggest economy, could be better than expected next year. And the situation in Europe is not as bad as many people think, according to the president of Germany's Bundesbank, as he told a newspaper on Sunday. The ECB is watching carefully how a recent drop in oil prices will affect the eurozone inflation, which is far below its target of just below 2%, and standing ready to do more to keep the region from slipping into deflation. The Bundesbank this month halved its growth forecast for Germany to 1% for next year. It also cut its prediction for 2014 growth to 1.4% from 1.9% back in June. Russia's troubled ruble strengthened a little bit last week as exporters sold foreign currency in response to government pressure to meet tax payments. But trading volumes were thin as many Western markets were closed for the Christmas Day holidays. The ruble earlier hit its highest against the dollar and euro since December 4th and has trimmed its losses against the greenback to about 37% this year. That's a look at business news on VOA Global. Well, Ira Melman may have the day off here on VOA Global, but he did leave us with a nice American cafe. That's coming up in just a moment, as well as David Byrd and some news on James Bond. Of course, he had a favorite drink that he liked, and you may know it was shaken, not stirred. David Byrd comes up with now in just a few moments, right after Ira Melman and the American Cafe.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. There are many famous historical sites in the Washington area that attract tourists. One of the lesser-known attractions is a 19th-century grist mill just outside the nation's capital. Still operating the same way it did 200 years ago, the mill draws some visitors and offers fresh grits and flour for local residents and restaurants. VOA's June So takes us to Colvin Run Mill, where the 19th century meets the 21st. Carol Pearson narrates.
Miller Mason Maddox Jr. and his two assistants are preparing to align the milling stones that they believe are the original ones used in the 1800s. They need to make sure the hand-chiseled stones that weigh about 1,000 kilograms are positioned very close to one another, but never touch.
The stones have to be perfectly balanced. If they touch, it'll create heat. And that'll break down the product and make it not as good.
On the first and third Sundays of each month, visitors to Colvin Run Mill can watch the miller grind corn or wheat.
This is a very quality process. It grinds slower than modern milling. It retains more nutrients in the product as it comes out. Plus, it doesn't damage the flour as much by keeping it cool.
The mill dates back to the 18th century when George Washington owned the property and built the mill's foundation. The mill itself was not constructed until 1811, and it changed hands a few times until Addison Millard purchased it in 1883. His family operated it for the next 50 years.
Then it became falling apart. The Fairfax County government acquired the mill. They started a huge restoration project.
The ground grains are sold in the mill's general store. Matthew Warshaw, chief executive at the Hyatt Hotel restaurant outside Washington, is a loyal customer.
At my restaurant, I like to use local ingredients. When I found that the mill produced grits utilizing local grown corn, I thought it was a perfect fit.
Warshaw uses the grits for customer favorites such as shrimp and grits. He says they take at least 45 minutes to cook and require constant attention, unlike most instant grits from the grocery stores that are ready in 5 minutes.
It is definitely worth it. You can taste the quality in the time that's spent making the grits from Colvin Run Mill.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Every Friday evening, a publicly funded radio station in Houston broadcasts a two-hour program aimed at prisoners and their loved ones. The show has also attracted listeners interested in knowing more about prison issues, even has international listeners who find it streaming on the Internet. VOA's Greg Flake has visited a live broadcast recently and filed this report from Houston.
KPFT, may I have your name and where you're calling from?
A main feature of the weekly prison show is the call-in segment, where people can address their imprisoned loved ones.
Richard, I just want to say I love you, and my birthday's passed. I know your birthday's coming up, too.
Many of the people working on the show are former convicts, including producer David Collingsworth, who first listened to it in a prison cell.
It showed me that somebody cared. Somebody was actually out there that cared.
Really appreciate it.
He says the show welcomes all callers, but there are often familiar voices on the line.
We can name all the regulars that call in, and we're a part of their lives, and that's what really matters to us.
The show sometimes features live music performed by former inmates like Dennis Price.
Well, now I'm locked away.
His experience emerges in many of his songs, but Price says he wants to move on.
I want to be a good person for my son, but it is a chapter in my life, and I've learned from it, and I think that it's made me who I am.
Greg Flakus, VOA News, Houston.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Visit us every day at voanews.com and many podcast and social media platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. The new James Bond film, Spectre, won't be released until next year, but one thing fans will see the British super spy doing is enjoying his favorite drink, a vodka martini. Since 1962's Goldfinger, fans have seen James Bond order a vodka martini, shaken not stirred, with a twist of lemon. But in the last Bond flick, Skyfall, purists were shocked to see 007 drinking a beer. Part of the reason was a marketing tie-in with the Heineken Brewing Company. In Spectre, James will be ordering his signature drink made with the Polish vodka Belvedere. At a special ceremony, Belvedere Vodka's head, Charles Gibb, told Reuters that his company hopes associating with 007 will boost its brand.
Hugely influential. I mean, Bond is known as a man of taste, a man of distinction, a man of style and sophistication. He resonates around the world. He's a global tastemaker. So as such, it's an amazing partnership for us to have and to be associated with Spectre.
As part of the partnership with the film, Belvedere has created two special 1 3/4 liter limited edition bottles. The MI6 bottle changes Belvedere's traditional blue ink with the green ink that the British spy agency uses to sign its documents. Instead of Belvedere Castle, you'll see a picture of MI6 on this bottle. The second bottle is a special edition with an LED light in the bottom, so the vodka glows blue. Charles Gibb says the MI6 bottle is a collector's item, but the blue light bottle will be for public sale.
So this is an amazing bottle, only 100 available them worldwide. Secondarily, we created what we're calling the Belvedere 007 Silver Sabre. So here we've taken our bottle of Belvedere, we've used a semi-transparent metallized silver paint, and then we've laser-etched all the branding on the bottle and then put a light in the base so it lights up and shines at night and looks pretty spectacular.
The tie-ins with Belvedere are not the first time that products have played a prominent role in the Bond films. In Dr. No, James drank a red striped beer. In From Russia with Love, Bond flew Pan Am Airways from London to Istanbul, even though the airline was based in the United States. In 1974's The Man with the Golden Gun, Bond drove an American Motors Corporation car in Thailand, even though the brand wasn't sold there. And in 2006's Casino Royale, Bond makes a point of saying he wears an Omega watch. But 007's signature drink has always been the vodka martini. Barbara Broccoli is the producer of Spectre. She says that James enjoys his favorite beverage with vodka, but that doesn't mean he exclusively drinks it.
Bond does like a drink, and he's not monogamous when it comes to drinking, but he likes a martini and he likes a beer and he likes a lot of other things too. So you'll be seeing him, drinking a martini, but drinking other things as well.
Andrew Lysett is a biographer of Bond author Ian Fleming. He told Reuters that Bond has made the drink, shaken not stirred, of course, part of his lore.
But it's very clear that vodka and vodka martinis is at the sort of top of his list of preferred drinks. It's the one that he comes back to. It's the one that sort of goes throughout the series in both books and films.
For LVMH, the parent company of Belvedere, the Bond Association could prove a windfall. The company owns such luxury houses as Louis Vuitton and Hermès, the perfume and cosmetics company Christian Dior, and Tag Heuer watches. So, what do you think? Are you a James Bond fan? Will you be looking for or buying one of Belvedere's special bottles? Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm Bird, David Bird.
You know, most recording artists and bands that are very successful end up with that one quintessential album that they release. It really is defining all of their talents and abilities, and it's just a superb piece of work. Stevie Wonder has arguably one of the greatest albums of all time in the Songs of Key of Life. We're going to hear a little bit from that coming up in our music segment right after sports on VOA Global. This is Sports on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. In women's college basketball, South Carolina is ranked number one in the Associated Press poll for the fifth straight week, while Stanford has its lowest ranking in nearly 9 years. The Gamecocks had a very busy week. They swept Hampton, Central Michigan, and Liberty, all by an average of 32 points. Connecticut and Texas remain second and third in Monday's top 25, while Notre Dame and Texas A&M changed places after the Aggies lost to the Longhorns on Sunday. Baylor, Louisville, Tennessee, North Carolina, Oregon State all round out the top 10 in the latest standings. Bernie Ecclestone's control of Formula One was fully restored on Thursday after overcoming court cases that had threatened his grip on the series. The 84-year-old Ecclestone stepped down as a board member of Formula One's holding company this year while standing trial for bribery in Germany. That case was closed in August when Ecclestone made a $100 million settlement payment. Investment group CVC Capital Partner, that's F1's controlling shareholder, announced Ecclestone's return to the board in a statement on Thursday that he would be continuing on as chief executive. Ecclestone built his power base in Formula One in the 1970s, and he helped to create the Formula One Constructors Association that controlled the business side of the series, including selling those lucrative television rights. Highly touted Seton Hall freshman Isaiah Whitehead is going to be sidelined with a stress fracture on his right foot. The Big East Conference school announced that injury on Wednesday, saying an MRI found that the shooting guard has a stress fracture of the second and third metatarsal bones. Doctors will be evaluating Whitehead's foot weekly. The school said the injury did not occur at any specific point but was caught early, preventing further damage. No timetable has been given for his return. Hiroki Kuroda is returning to Japan to pitch for the Hiroshima Toyo Carp. An official with knowledge of that move told ESPN in New York, confirming Japanese media baseball reports. The free agent right-hander reunites with his first professional team, reportedly on a one-year contract worth $3.3 million. Kuroda pitched for Hiroshima from 1997 to 2007 before he signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's sports on VOA Global. The Recording Academy will be paying tribute to legendary singer Stevie Wonder with a two-hour CBS television special. Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life, an all-star Grammy salute, celebrates the songbook and legacy of the 25-time Grammy winner. The show is scheduled to air February 16th. Neil Portnow, president and CEO of the Recording Academy, said in a statement, Stevie Wonder is a beloved icon whose golden songbook remains one of America's and music's greatest treasures. So hard to pick out anything that stands out from that album. It's all great, but let's hear a little bit from Stevie Wonder and Sir Duke.
Because the record has a groove, don't make it.
Born Stevland Hardaway, Judkins Morris, a.k.a. Stevie Wonder, and Sir Duke from Songs in the Key of Life. And if you're one of our younger listeners and you've never heard this album, you owe it to yourself to go out right after the show and get it. You're in for a big treat. Songs in the Key of Life, what we used to call a double album because it was two records. That's music on VOA Global. This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson with you. You know, goats are known to eat just about anything, but it didn't dawn on Vince Thomas in Reno, Nevada until recently that that menu might include Christmas trees. Thomas said his goats have been used in the past to help graze in areas with fire-prone weeds along the Sierra's eastern front, and he became curious and tossed in a piece of pine tree to the goats. Well, they devoured it, pine needles and all. He said basically a Christmas tree after the goats get it looks a little bit like Charlie Brown's scrawny Christmas tree. It has nothing but branches on it, he said. He's launching a new program with the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District on Friday to use his 40 goats to help recycle Christmas trees. He says he got tired of watching people just discard the trees in landfills or dump them on public property where they become a fire danger. So now he's going to have the goats eat the trees. What a good idea. You know what another good idea is? Get yourself a free 2015 VOA calendar. You can write to us at voaasia@voanews.com. And all you have to do is ask for it and include your postal mailing address, also in your native language, if applicable. And we'll try to use that to send it to you a little bit faster and maybe more reliably through the mail. International mail can take a while, so please be patient, but we'll try to get those out to you as fast as possible. voaasia@voanews.com is our email. That wraps up this edition of VOA Global. Thanks for joining us. Our studio engineers, Daryl Smith and Kelvin Fowler at the controls. Producer and director is Tracy Carter. And our managing editor is Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day. Join us again tomorrow, won't you?